Welcome back, everybody. And with me is Bob Schumann, who is an experienced, skilled trial lawyer who does a lot of medical malpractice and is very, very familiar with failure to diagnose cancer cases. We're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about the new medical malpractice law and how that comes into play in a situation involving failure to diagnose cancer cases. So, Bob, could you just tell us a little bit about the new law and what it does, what it's supposed to achieve, that type of thing?
Sure. This is a new law that came in, as you know, Frank, I think November 4th of 2012. As we discussed earlier today, I'm not a big fan of it, although it is really too early to tell whether it's going to be efficacious and helpful to patients, which it's supposed to be. And essentially what it is, it's supposed to give a avenue for patients or lawyers representing patients to try to explore early settlement prior to going through the lengthy litigation process. I am not convinced, Frank, that that will happen. There is a word that is attached to the new law, which is transparency, which is meant to be that there's honesty between the doctors and the patients, to be able to give the doctors an opportunity to say, we made a mistake, I'm sorry, let's try to right this wrong financially as best as possible. What bothers me the most is two things. One, there's really no teeth in it, in this law, in terms of protecting the patients if the doctors don't take advantage of this. And secondly is that there's something called peer review, which you know well about, Frank, and that's basically the internal investigations that most hospitals will conduct if there is a significant unfavorable result in a hospital setting. And we are not allowed to ever hear about that, to see any documents associated with it, to be able to hear what went on, this discussion as to whether there were any admissions by the doctors or any criticism. None of that is ever allowed to enter our files, our ears. And if there was some type of relaxation of that peer review so that there was true transparency, then I think this law might be more efficacious, but it is not, unfortunately. And so we'll see what happens with it, but I'm not an optimist.
So now with this new law, and I agree with you, and peer review is protected by a statute, actually, so that, again, we really have to start the whole investigation by scratch when we go into the litigation process. But the new law, as I understand it, means that basically there is a so-called cooling off period where the other side or the hospital or doctor has the opportunity to evaluate the case and respond. And what has been your experience with that to this point?
Well, again, it's really too early to tell because there's a six-month waiting period, as you know. Basically, it says that we as attorneys are supposed to send the doctor a letter detailing what we say that he or she did or did not do, what should have been done, what is the harm caused by it, and then there's supposed to be a response to that. Again, since it's so new, 8 months old or 9 months old, I don't think a lot of us have really had a chance to see whether it's going to work or not. But so far, I have not seen any positive response as a result of sending out these what's called 60L letters.
Yeah, and that's been my experience as well. I mean, in an ideal world, what it's supposed to do is it's supposed to encourage settlement early so that these cases do not get crazy in terms of their costs. But at this point, again, it's too early to tell. And many of us as trial lawyers would do that anyways, just as a matter of course, to explore the possibility of settlement prior to the case going into suit. Let's go into the whole process of litigation. They've denied your 60L letter, and now you're put in a position where you're going to have to go into suit. There are still pitfalls that we have to deal with, and could you explain one of those as pitfalls that we all have to get by with a malpractice case?
Well, a hurdle, I think, would be a better phrase for it, and you're probably referring to the tribunal process.
Yes.
In 1986, Frank, as you recall, the medical lobby got some legislation passed to basically try to weed out frivolous suits. Certainly something that is I'm in total favor of. When you talk about a perfect world, in a perfect world there'd be no medical malpractice. And still in that better world, there would be no frivolous lawsuits. And Massachusetts has a phenomenal screening process that just about ensures that frivolous suits are weeded out. And most practitioners who know what they're doing aren't going to file anything that resembles a frivolous suit. The malpractice tribunal is after you file your suit, you have to present reports from qualified healthcare providers, physicians, who say that there has been a departure from standards of care and that there has been harm caused to the patient. You must appear before a panel consisting of a judge, a doctor of the same specialty, and a lawyer, and be able to get by that hurdle to show them this is a case that is worthy of going forward. If that doesn't happen, your case is either dismissed or you have to file a $6,000 bond. It's a great fail-safe mechanism we have here in Massachusetts to keep out frivolous malpractice suits.
So getting by...
And it works.
Getting by that hurdle, you now get by that hurdle. You don't win.
No.
Basically, all it does is allows you the key to the city to be able to do discovery. And what is discovery?
Discovery is the linchpin of litigation. It allows us to find out, and allows all parties to find out, what does the other side know, what information do they have, what documents do they have, and more importantly, what is the testimony that the litigants and the witnesses to this are going to be able to give. What does the doctor say? And we're able to bring the doctor in, or the nurse, or whoever the healthcare provider is, and examine them quite carefully under oath. And it's a time when we learn probably much more about the case than we ever learn from a simple review of the records. Same thing for the other side, who will get to take a deposition of the decedent's loved ones or the person that has been harmed and find out more about what happened. Was there something that the patient did that caused this delay in diagnosis by failing to come in and see the doctor on a timely basis? And here's where I'm going to use my bully pulpit, is knowing what we all know about failure to diagnose cancer cases. The best thing that I think that you and I could advise the listening public is when you have signs and symptoms that something is going on wrong, don't go into denial. Go see your doctor and find out what is going on. Early diagnosis is key. Early diagnosis is what cancer treatment is all about. Without early diagnosis, the prognosis gets worse, and it can be the fault of the patient if the patient doesn't follow up, and the fault of the doctor if the doctor has blinders on and doesn't really want to consider what can be causing the patient's
signs. Now you raise it's very, very good advice, and you raise a very, very good issue. And in fact, you actually raise a legal theory, and that's called comparative negligence. In other words, in medical malpractice cases, the negligence isn't only focused on the doctor. It can be focused on the patient. Could you explain that, Bob?
Sure. Again, we as citizens, we as human beings, have obligations as well, too. It's not only the doctor or healthcare provider that has obligations in situations such as this. So the obligation of a patient for all of us is to be able to seek timely medical care, not let these symptoms go unheeded or unaddressed, and to follow the advice of the doctor. If those things don't happen, then comparative negligence can come into play in these cases where the jury can consider what fault the patient has in the delay in the diagnosis of their condition.
Now, discovery is something that basically we kind of reinvent the wheel, and I know you're an excellent cross-examiner, and many times it's not till we really do discovery that we learn basically where the liability lies. We've done our discovery, case is in good shape, now we have some options, and the options not only a trial, there's also alternative dispute resolution. Could you explain a little bit about what that is?
Sure. In every malpractice case, in any type of personal injury case that we handle, After discovery has been substantially completed, after we have a really good idea of what's going on, then the lawyer is going to reach out to the insurance company and say, are you interested in selling? If there isn't interest and we cannot agree on a figure between us, then there's something called mediation, where we go before either a retired judge or a skilled mediator, where all the parties are brought into essentially the same room. We are given an opportunity to talk about the cases. Then we're split out to separate rooms, and the mediator does what I call shuttle diplomacy, back and forth between the rooms, to try to bring the parties to a figure that they can both live with.
And Bob, I'm going to have you hold that thought while we take our break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about alternative dispute resolution, trial, and then we're going to cover the public policy aspects of medical negligence cases.
Sounds good.